Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about how millions of Americans suffer from depression or anxiety. As a matter of fact, anxiety disorders alone affect 18% of the United States population. And my guest this evening believes that much of this is not only treatable, but may be as simple as breaking our habit of negative language to ourselves and its toll on our well-being. Tonight we talk about how to reverse negativity simply by changing what we say, how we say it. My guest this evening is Dr. Johnny Lopes, a board-certified practicing psychiatrist for adults, adolescents, and children, and a former team psychiatrist for the Brooklyn Nets. He is the author of Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. He is an accomplished actor and film producer and has starred in numerous stage productions, including The Elephant Man in New York City. It is a pleasure to welcome Dr. Johnny Lopes to help us reinvent ourselves and help us to take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome, Dr. Johnny Lopes.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here today.
Well, what prompted you to write this book, Dr. Lopes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get that one a lot. You know, it was about a few years into my psychiatric training and residency when I started, more of my peer relations were more psychiatrists, other folks who were practicing physicians. And, you know, after a long day in the hospital, we'd share stories of our childhood and our upbringing. And over time, I eventually became the go-to comedian of telling what seemed to be absurd stories about their childhood. And I started recognizing how it seemed that a lot of what I had experienced as a child was unique to a lot of the folks who were in the academic profession I was in. And I started realizing that I didn't realize how I had experienced a lot of different traumas growing up and a lot of different unique experiences that over time as I became a practicing psychiatrist really could derail certain individuals from becoming their best selves. And as I became a better psychiatrist myself and started treating my own patients, I began to reflect on what tools was it? What was it about my childhood? Because I came from a very low middle-class family. My parents were barely blue collar, and neither of them had graduated high school. So it wasn't monetarily. We didn't have a social network. My parents are both loners. And so I was wondering what was it? What tools was either I had practiced and didn't realize I had done? What in my education, what in my thinking, what in the other people that shaped my life that had helped me persevere and develop the resilience to sort of overcome the obstacles that weren't in my control. I really like the statement that you say in the beginning about 90% of things in our lives are not in our control, and I completely agree with that. So I started realizing it would be interesting to write a book that sort of provided a little bit of a memoiric narrative to share with readers about what I had gone through and try to sort of personalize it for them and then start developing the tools and what I realized was a big part of my component and behaviors that helped me overcome those and become somewhat successful.
One of the things you mentioned in your book is that very often you mentioned, trauma. And one of the things you mentioned in your book is that when we undergo trauma in our lives, either in our adolescence or our childhood, it becomes overwhelming and we become victims. And one of the things you point out is that we need to triumph over victimization and look at our trauma in a different way so that we survive and make it work for us. Talk to us about how we overcome the trauma and change our outlook on it.
Right. So, of course, there's a lot of different various traumas that we can all experience, whether it's physical or emotional and how one responds to that can be different. I think it's a nurturing. It's a long-term process. It's not going to be something that happens overnight. I think one has to sort of come to grips emotionally with how the trauma has affected them, to process the emotional experience that comes, whether it's through sadness or anxiety. And at some point, as the healing, the trauma dissipates and the healing begins, it really becomes the cognitive process of how one is going to go forth from that trauma. I think a lot of my traumas took many, many years, probably over 10 years, for me to have the cognitive realization that staying in this victim mentality that the world owed me something because of what happened to me through childhood.
Can you give us an example of what you are referring to?
Sure.
Yes.
So, I in the book, I look back at this. There's this wacky story when I was 8 years old where I was new to Brooklyn and my parents had gone out one evening, and I really asked my father to pick me up from my aunt's house because they were still strangers to me. Even though they were my family, I did not know them. And the night went on, and when I woke up in the middle of the night, I realized my father had not picked me up, and I was in the stranger's house. And I tried to reach him, and it became a long-winded night of many phone calls and anxieties that really ended up developing a little sense of paranoia that they had abandoned me. And I spent, I truly believe I developed a separation anxiety disorder. I developed an intense anxiety that impacted my ability to nurture my social and hobbies through the rest of my adolescence. And that sort of lingered almost through college. And I remember in my early 20s sort of feeling that there was an anger that this had happened to me. And of course, as a late adolescent might do, I took it a lot out of my parents. And I really went to sleep and lived my days waiting for the world to give me something to make up for what had occurred, that the world had owed me something. And I realized at some point around 22, 23, that just wasn't going to happen. The world just doesn't, there's no star looking down on you and says, hey, that person has been through a lot. Let's throw them a bone. And, you know, sometimes, of course, you can get lucky. But the luck I found comes when you're willing to look past the victim mentality and create a vulnerability to put yourself out there to ask for help.
And how did you do that for yourself?
So I started following other people's recommendations. I sort of allowed myself to realize that I was very limited in what I knew of the world and how the world operated to help gain the successes you were looking for. So I became more curious about my friends, about their lives. How did they develop the successes they did? And again, when I use success, I don't mean at the very macro level about making extreme amount of wealth or becoming famous, but at very small micro levels of how did you develop friendships? How did you develop the capability to ask for dates? How did you start learning how to wear those type of clothes you're wearing? Very, very small little baby steps I took, and I developed mentorships within my friends, and you know, would take them out for coffee and ask them if they can guide me through a lot of the deficits that I was having. I started taking a more proactive role in reading and studying about gaining ways to be more successful as an actor in my artistic endeavors. I stopped punishing myself. That was another thing that I do a lot in my practice. A lot of work I do is about learning to love ourselves regardless of the situation and recognizing that there's always time to make changes. And I started taking a more positive approach that, yes, this had occurred to me, but if I really want to live day to day with the on the journey to flourish, I would have to make some more changes within my thinking and my thoughts and my language.
Now, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Elena Barbaro. And this evening, we're talking with Dr. Johnny Lopps, a board-certified practicing psychiatrist for adults, adolescents, and children, and a former team psychiatrist for the Brooklyn Nets. He is the author of a really very special book called Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. And I must say that the book is very readable. You feel like you're talking with a friend who has written about his personal experiences. So let's go on. So in other words, you learn to have some, to create some positive thinking about yourself and stop punishing yourself.
Mm-hmm. I started realizing, and this is something else I work a lot with my patients, is that we can't go on each day, again, waiting that if today, I work with a lot, especially with folks in their early 20s, and again, we're talking about this generation, there's a lot of the usage of the word entitlement is coming a lot, and with the millennial generation. And I remember being that age, and each day that something substantial didn't happen, I would have a negative aspect of that day. You know, a lot of wonderful things could have happened. I could have had a nice meal with my parents. I could have saw a friend. I could have went and saw a movie. But I would become obsessive each night saying, well, how come something substantial didn't happen today? How come I didn't get a girlfriend? How come I didn't get that big audition? How come it doesn't look like I'm making much of my life? And I start realizing that if we define, and I'd like to use that word, if we define each day or each week, we define our successes, again, on these macro levels, hoping that these big, substantial moments will happen to us to be happy and achieve success, then we're going to be always at risk for feeling low self-worth and, again, develop anxiety and depression. So I found that life became easier and more tolerable if I allowed the smaller things in life to be what they ended up, I realized as I've gotten older, to be what they are, to be the really great moments in life, that it is the smaller moments. So every time I do have a coffee with a friend, I cherish that moment. Here I am interacting with a wonderful person. If I had the opportunity to have a wonderful meal with my parents. And I realized that carrying the small positivities through the day allowed me to negate the robust sort of failure, not failures, but if I didn't get the audition, it didn't fully undo all the other wonderful parts of the day. I focused and had more clarity about how there were so many positive things in these days. And then I realized that over time, that if something really nice did happen, like I got a girlfriend, or I did book a gig, or I did get to see an old friend, that was only more substantial to the course of the day, who I was. I found it more of an ease how I carried myself, and I allowed myself to be at a baseline happiness that only then I felt normalized my experience, that made it easier to have my presence for the bigger things, if that makes sense.
So what you're saying is that in order to appreciate life, we have to look for the smaller things, for the little things that really matter, and sometimes we overlook because we were waiting for the big things. We're waiting for the knock at the door that says you have a big contract.
Exactly.
And what we need to do is look around at the people in our lives and what we do have, and so that we can count our blessings on a daily basis and be ready for the big things when they come. So
yeah.
So we're going to talk more about how to reinvent yourself when we come back, and we talk with Dr. Johnny Lopes, who is a psychiatrist in Brooklyn, and who is going to give us some more examples of how we can change our thinking and our negative assumptions, which work against our best interests, and how why being nice can really trigger depression. That's a big one. When we come back to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking with Dr. Johnny Lopes, a board-certified practicing psychiatrist for adults, adolescents, and children, and a former team psychiatrist for the Brooklyn Nets. And he is the author of a very, very fine book called Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. And this is a very fine book with many, many wonderful examples. And something that many of us may be dealing with is, you know, if we have a bad day on the road or somebody tries to cut us off, we deal with anger. And some of us don't know really how to deal with it and get it out without hurting and being hurting our partner or loved ones in our life. How do we do that, Dr. Lopes?
Well, I think the first step of trying to take control of anger is typically just to become mindful that you have it. I find a lot of times that a lot of folks don't even recognize that they are full of anger, and it's usually their partners or significant others that come to me expressing that they're concerned about their partner because they're so angry. So I think the first part is, which the book does a lot, is to actually take a step back and ask yourself, do you feel that anger is a common emotion you express to help cope with things that seem not tolerable? So my first recommendation to the listeners is to ask yourself, when you're dealing with conflict, when you're dealing with something that's not going your way, what is one of the ways that you deal with emotions, or how do you get emotional? And if you recognize that anger is the large emotion that you experience, well, what is that about? What is going on that's so intolerable in the moment that your body leads to anger? And one of my favorite analytic supervisors when I was much younger, he usually liked to say whenever a person externalizes anger, it means they're internalizing anxiety. So a lot of times I find that angry people are anxious people who are not in tune with how to tolerate anxiety. They don't know how to deal with the conflict. There's a lot of uncertainty. So what is that about? What's going on? And you mentioned sort of on the road. Why when you're on the road and somebody cuts you off, you get so angry. Is that really a source of anxiety because you feel that somebody was out to get you and you personalized it, that this person purposely wanted to almost cause an accident? And so are you somebody who gets angry because you make a lot of automatic assumptions about people on the road when, in fact, you probably have no reason what was going on in that person's mind when they probably most likely accidentally cut you off? I highly doubt it was personal. When you get angry at home with your significant other because maybe they didn't clean up the dishes as you expected, well, take a look there. What are you anxious about? Are you anxious because your partner is not meeting the demands that you had hoped they would do? And again, are you making assumptions about what chores they should be responsible for? Or another one you had spoke about before when we were speaking, is it about communication? Are you using anger as a form to communicate how anxious you are that things are not occurring as you'd like them to be in the house? Well, if that's the case, then why aren't we communicating in a pragmatic, practical way that we see eye to eye? A lot of folks don't have the appropriate active listening skills to work with their partners, and they find that when things don't go their way, they just use anger. It comes naturally to them to justify something they're displeased with. And so one of the recommendations I give there is, instead of just sort of berating a partner, being like, the dishes are not done again, trying to learn how to say, I find that I am upset when the dishes are not done, trying to learn how to label things that cause you an emotion as opposed to emotionally expressing things. Because what I find when you're in a partner situation, if your partner knows that that's the style that you use to cope with conflict, they probably already have a reciprocal defense style to your anger, and here we are. We're now going to start having a poor communicative relationship where each person's needs are never met. So I know I'm saying a lot, but a lot about is trying to identify if you use anger as a way to cope. What's going on when you get angry? It seems there's probably something that's intolerable to you, whether it's a thought or an automatic assumption or a behavior from somebody's ends that they're not meeting your needs. And so what's happening within the communication or in your mind that's leading to anger to manage what you're feeling. And that's usually the first couple steps that I ask people to take a look at is if they identify themselves as an angry person.
Now, along with anger goes the opposite. And you say in your book that sometimes being nice can actually trigger depression.
Yes.
How is that?
Well, people who are nice, of course, I enjoy nice people. We all like nice people. But there, in fact, lies the issue. One of the other important parts of my book that I speak a lot and speak a lot in my practice is about our self-worth, our healthy ego. And a lot of us have various ways that we like to soothe our self-ego. And folks who have become nice, they have found through time that one of the ways to feel good about themselves and get the admiration of others is to be nice. But especially, I'll speak for New York City, where there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of madness going on day to day. Nice people can easily be taken advantage of because the world here is so quick and people have so many needs that bosses will identify the nice people, certain partners will find nice people, and over time, they will start exploiting the nice people to sort of get and help their needs get done. And what I find of the nice people that come to see me is that they have done a poor job of setting boundaries and learning to assert themselves. And so what the book says is that there's a difference between being nice and being kind. I find that people who are kind are able to be nice to people, but they know how to set boundaries when they find that they're overwhelmed or they're being taken advantage of, and they can say to the boss, like, hey, I appreciate that you want me to take on this extra project, but I do find that I already have two projects that I'm working on for you, and so I don't think it'd be in my best interest to take on this third because I might not do as well with the first two. And that would be appropriate, and I'd be very proud of any of my patients who are able to sort of set that healthy boundary. But a lot what I find with nice people who are so insecure, they don't have the capability to disappoint bosses, significant others, friends, that invariably they keep saying yes, and they overload themselves so much where they don't have free time for themselves at night, they don't have free time for themselves on the weekends, and eventually it leads to burnout. So their heart's in the right place, but because they have their own successes they're trying to obtain, and they want to keep their healthy ego going, they invariably burn out and develop anxiety and depression because they don't know how to say no.
In a way that is not, that doesn't antagonize people.
Exactly.
But stands up for oneself.
Yes.
And I think that's a very important point, particularly in today's society.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of you who are interested, and I think you all should be interested, this is a wonderful book, Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. It's written as if you're talking to a friend of yours. And it's put out by Amazon. Is that correct?
Correct. We have it listed on. It's on Amazon and it's on BarnesandNoble.com.
So repeat that again. It's on Amazon?
The book is on Amazon.com for pre-order as well as BarnesandNoble.com for pre-order. And it'll be available both for paperback and for Kindle for Amazon and Nook for Barnes & Noble on its release date of May 15th. But you can go there and do pre-order copies today.
Well, the book is so well written and so filled with stories and anecdotes that people can relate to. You feel like you're really talking to a friend. Let's talk about something that you mentioned here about in your book. You talk about how to use sensory tools to distract ourselves from anger and avoid negative experiences. What do you mean by that?
Well, it goes back to a lot of what we've reiterated. And that, again, that's why I actually enjoy reading the book because it's a good reminder of how many things are so interconnected. Our emotions, our cognition, our social cues, they're so connected. It's almost like a triangulation that you always want to be nurturing each one. And what I mean by those is that a lot of times, again, we're very overwhelmed by certain experiences during the day. And even though I talk about not trying to undo the victim mentality at the macro level, but there are certain moments of each day where something can happen that angers us or frustrates us, and a lot of times we get in this self-loathing attitude that we're owed or we're due someone or something to help normalize that. And it's that passive style that can sort of further lead to maladaptive ways to cope. Or, as I've said, too, a lot of folks, unfortunately, who I see, they'll go to substances as a way to, again, neutralize the painful experiences. And what I say in the book is that there are so many beautiful sensory things around us that can help us distract us or set shift our attention away from the noxious stimuli. And you, if you think about it, if you take each sense, you can easily pinpoint something. You can, if you use your eyes, you can watch a funny TV show. I'm always about Seinfeld at 11 o'clock. My wife knows that's a way for me to digress from the stressors of my day. So you can watch a funny show. You can watch, play video games. You can use your hearing. You can listen to a friend. You can listen to a podcast. You can have a conversation. You can use your taste. Enjoy a favorite food, a favorite flavor. They say citrus things like oranges and grapefruit can sometimes help normalize the mind's experience when we're frustrated. Smell. My wife and I have favorite candles we like to put on at the end of the day. And sensory, touch. You know, a hot shower, a cold shower, exercise, getting the sweat going, getting the burn going. So there's so many wonderful ways that the human body had already set up as elaborate ways to distract the mind, that if we use them and just practice them and get into the habit of utilizing those tools, we can minimize, again, perpetual negativity and as well as just developing maladaptive ways to cope.
So what you're saying is that it's really important for us to recognize the day that we've had.
Oh, yeah.
Not to deny it, but to recognize it and then to find ways to cope with it in ways that are not that are positive in our lives, such as you've mentioned, watching a TV program, smelling nice candles, laughing, or doing something enjoyable.
Yes. Absolutely. We don't want to get into the habit of trying to numb ourselves or deny the experience. So I work with these teenagers trying to help them normalize their experience and learn how to manage the emotions so that when they become adults, who I also see that we're already not behind the eight ball and they can tolerate the emotions and be happier and live pretty healthy, normal experiences.
I want to thank you, Dr. Jenny Lopps, author of Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All, for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding how negative attitudes work against our best interest, how being nice can actually trigger depression, how to use sensory tools to distract ourselves from the day when we felt anger and avoid negative experiences. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.